His consciousness has been Christed. He's now seeing reality.
And always then,
we who are on the spiritual path must remember we are walking in a perfect universe. Let's ask ourselves a very strange question. What is preventing God's government from being on earth? Give it a moment's thought. When Marconi invented the wireless, Joel tells us that he came upon a very important discovery which made it possible. And that was that he did not have to overcome air resistance. There wasn't any. All the others who were working on such an invention were trying to overcome air resistance. And there wasn't any. Marconi, knowing this, never doubted that he would produce the wireless. What is preventing God's government from being on earth? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. What could prevent it? Is there another power? And then comes the recognition that it is on earth. Nothing can prevent it, so it must be here. And it is the acceptance of that in your consciousness that becomes a healing consciousness. It is here. The power of God is here. The government of God is here. The will of God is being done. Don't let a little thing disturb you that you don't see it. There's nothing can prevent it from being here and doing its job. And as this rings in you, you have found spiritual power. You don't have to be power. You don't have to find power anymore. You don't have to seek power. It already is. And because the power of God is only good power is functioning in this universe. All around us, only good action is possible. You see, this becomes your Bible by which you live. Only good action is possible. Then what's this that is not good action? If only good action is possible, this which is not good action must be mirage. But it will continue to function as a seeming reality unless I face it with the truth that only perfect God action is possible. And when my mind is cleansed of the belief that any other action is possible, then I am bringing God government into my experience, out of the invisible, into the visible, tangible life that moves in this world. Every now and then I sit down with myself to review where I stand in this work. And on healing, I have a little chart for myself, which I try to follow, and always try to improve. I'd like to let you peek over my shoulder on this chart, because I find it very valuable. And because we are speaking as spirit to spirit, I haven't the slightest feeling about letting you look at the way we see things. the impersonal way. And I'd like you to see them from that light. Now, what you call metaphysical healing could also be called dehypnotizing. And so I have called my little notes Overcoming Hypnotism. These should be part of your consciousness. God did not make matter. Hearts, lungs, bones, blood, brains, faces, bodies, organs. If you doubt that, just think for a moment. And you'll see that there's much authority in the Bible to verify that. That God did not make the human heart, which needs transplanting, or the brain, which has tumors, or the bones, which break, or the bodies, which decompose. God did not make matter. This is the very basis of your consciousness. Now, what does that mean to you in your work of knowing truth? It means that you can never have matter to heal, to change, to improve, for the simple reason that there is no matter. Now, that's a level of consciousness we have to come to, adhere to, and with integrity maintain. We can never have matter to heal, to reform, to improve, correct. There is no matter. Now you're going to be faced with a paradox, a dilemma, which I have to face every day. And I wrote it to myself just this way: but people are calling for me to heal matter. What shall I do? You see, this is my communion with Spirit. And the response is, give them what they want and need. They want good matter. Give them good matter. That does not involve healing. That involves dehypnotizing. Take them out of hypnosis. This is what you have to do with yourself. Not be persuaded that you want to improve your material self, but come into the realization of your spiritual being, and you'll find you have no matter to improve or need to. Well, how do you dehypnotize people? First, tell them you will help them. I will help you. I will help you. Not a person, but the invisible spirit named I will help you. And be conscious that you are saying I with that meaning, never feeling a personality involved. I will help you. And here is the surprise. The second step after I will help you is to dehypnotize yourself, not your patient. And you will find when you are dehypnotized, the patient is. No matter how many people ask you for help, there's only one patient, and that's you. You who believe there is something wrong are the patient. You who accept from somebody that something is wrong, you have made yourself a patient. And as long as you believe what you have been told, that something is wrong, you cannot help that individual. You must dehypnotize yourself from the belief that there is God and a patient. In your dehypnosis, the miracle happens. Now let's follow that through. How do you dehypnotize yourself completely? First, you must prepare. And that preparation never ends. There is no time when your preparations are finished. You must live in the consciousness that only spirit is. And because you will find it difficult to maintain that awareness, your preparation never ends. Without ceasing, you must renew your awareness that spirit alone is. And so daily you are living in the kingdom of spirit. You are only conscious of spirit wherever you see matter. You're looking out at a child with your eyes, but your consciousness is aware of spiritual presence. You're looking out at the individuals of the world, but your consciousness is aware of spiritual activity. You're looking out at the world, the conditions of the world, but your consciousness knows the truth of spiritual presence everywhere. This is your preparation, your continuing preparation. This is the continuity of your true consciousness. And so you are redeeming the material world consciously into spiritual realization, knowing that only spirit is there. And it makes no difference what comes to you out of that world. It must be spirit because that's all that is there. Whatever form it appears in makes no difference to you. Only spirit can be there. And if you took that day of prayer that we spoke about, Our Father, Our Spirit, Hallowed be Thy name, you rested in the consciousness that only Spirit stands where I see mother, father, sister, brother, husband, wife, child. Only Spirit is where I see one who is living and one who is dead. It makes no difference what I see, only spirit is there. And that spirit can never be anything other than itself. You are dehypnotizing from form, recognizing that life is spirit. And form is concept about that life. You are dehypnotizing yourself. Now, of course, because of the difficulty of this, thinking spirit, dwelling in spirit, it isn't enough. So you have to meditate upon this and contemplate on this regularly until this spiritual consciousness permeates all that you are. Until upon awakening in the morning, you are spiritually conscious without trying to be. And then you jog yourself constantly during the day to let yourself know that this ogre of a boss is spirit, not matter. And he's pure love and truth. And this other creature over here who's doing such and such is pure spirit. You're lifting yourself out of the mental tendency to finitize, to materialize, when you find yourself being impatient, angry, condemnatory, vengeful, it is all because you are not seeing a spiritual universe. And so all of this becomes your cleansing, your purifying, your continuing preparation for the dawn of spiritual consciousness without conscious thought. If the phone were to ring at that moment, you'd know it would have to be spirit that is there. You wouldn't have to start all over again from the beginning and climb the mountaintop. You must be there. Now you're establishing not only your spiritual identity, but the spiritual identity of the world and its inhabitants. And if somebody tells you that men are coming from Mars, you can say, well, that's fine. They must be spiritual beings because there's no other kind, and they must be friendly, therefore. All the men in space, all of the flying saucers must be friendly spirit or nothing at all. There's no other kind of being than pure, perfect, harmonious spirit. Your entire universe is being spiritualized into the reality of its being. And from it, fear, doubt, uncertainty depart. In the realization that all is spirit, there comes the realization that the need to strive and struggle is over. All is established in spirit. I can mentally relax and know that the spiritual kingdom is done, finished, perfect, and it embodies every need I will ever possess. From now unto eternity, my needs in spirit are completed. And if I will rest mentally in the realization that the kingdom of God is come, is done, is functioning, I will behold the gradual unfoldment of those needs into form. We feel that peace, that truth. But it's always this continuing spiritual preparation that makes it possible. Now you have dematerialized the world, and you don't have hearts and lungs and livers in it. And every time they pop up again, you'll have to do it over again. So if one of your organs begins to give you some trouble, it's because you're not accepting spiritual reality. And that will be a signal to you that there's a material consciousness still lurking within you. This head cold, this sneezing, this headache, this backache, they're happening to a material consciousness. A spiritual consciousness will stand there and realize, how can I have arthritis? How can spirit be doubled over with pain? When I say I have these things, I'm speaking about a material me. That's my mistake, false identity. And so the change must be in your consciousness that I am the living spirit of God, eternal, unchanging. I can never be less than that spirit, for there is no other life. And as you hold to that consciousness, it will be a fine practitioner, and it will teach the arthritis that it could only live in a false material consciousness. Now, we're still in our preparation. We're believing only in spirit, not in matter, only in God, not in man. And that is where we rest. There's nothing more to think about. Once we have accepted God as the only being, it's up to God to run his universe, and I'll stay out of the way. If there's going to be a spiritual impulse within me, fine, I'll obey it. It's up to God to put it there. This is God's universe and God's life, God's being, one infinite God, one infinite spiritual self. I am the Father of one, but the Father is greater than I. Always, I must trust that God knows what God is about, and knows it now, and can communicate it if necessary. I am now living in the reality that spirit is the only power, the only mind, and the only presence. I personally am no longer there. Only spirit exists. Omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent spirit. We learn to depend 100% on the truth of spirit's all-presence, power, and mind, fulfilling itself perfectly so that now spirit liveth my life. But spirit liveth the life of everyone else. They have no other life. The life they are living is the mirage. Spirit is living its life now. Spirit is living its life as the you that you do not know. Spirit is living your life invisibly. And that spirit which is living your invisible life is your permanent self. And it will always be your permanent self. And this outer man must put on the garment of immortality. This outer man must drop the belief that this is my life and recognize that the invisible spirit is my life. And the life of every other individual, whether he or she knows it or not. And because it is the only power, if I let this enter my consciousness, that power will demonstrate its presence and reveal itself where I stand. Not if I question that power, not if I live in a mind, but if I live in consciousness, not mind, but in consciousness, in the acceptance. If I move out of mind into truth, and here I'd like to come face to face with another paradox, which says, know the truth, and also says, take no thought. And you wonder, how can I know the truth if I take no thought? Always these paradoxes confront us. But somehow, when you are motivated to know spirit aright, the answers come. And then you feel like a child, they're so simple. Why can't you know the truth by taking thought and then be still and take no thought? Why can't they come in sequence? First, know the truth and then take no thought. Very simple. And you find that's exactly what it does mean. First, know the truth, because what you think is the truth isn't the truth. That's your thought about the truth. And now take no thought, and the truth will come to you. And so you find there is no paradox if you take them in sequences of time. The truth that I will know then is that God is here. And because God is here, God knows all. I can be still and let this all-knowing God do all the knowing for me. And now I take no thought. And God, who knows the truth, reveals the truth as the perfection of all being. Now you might be all thumbs and two left feet at first as you find your spiritual center, but it comes. The dehypnosis takes root. The power of the presence is felt. The reality of your spiritual being is realized. The divine guidance seeps into your consciousness. Confidence and assurance are born. You know, beyond a shadow of doubt, that you are being divinely guided. And this is the nature of our dehypnosis. Now, as we meditate upon these things regularly and our awareness deepens, we come finally to a place where we have to ask ourselves certain questions. I have what seems to be a spiritual consciousness, but how can I be sure? And so we have these questions we ask ourselves. Is your mind free? Uncluttered, thoughtless. In other words, are you fully depending on the invisible Christ? Are you aware of God's presence within? Are you in oneness with that presence? Are you out of personal selfhood? Are you Christ now? Now, these are the important questions. And if you are able to answer these questions so that you are Christ now, then you're ready to apply truth to the lie that presents itself to you. For either you have a problem or someone has reported it to you. And the truth you would now apply to the lie is this: who is calling? And the answer would have to be, matter is calling. It may be your best friend, it may be your husband, it may be your wife, but the answer is, matter is calling. But truth cannot be thought or spoken by matter. Right. So how does the individual know he's sick? What is reporting sickness? A human brain. Did God make that human brain? Is the human brain divinely conceived? Is it matter? Is it ever sick? Does it ever have tumors? Does it disintegrate? Is it a God conception? No. Therefore, how can it know truth? No matter what it tells you, must be a lie. It can even say, I'm well, and that's a lie. The human brain can only tell you about a material condition. And you are living in the consciousness that only spirit is. So you know that whoever reports a problem to you, including yourself, can only be reporting about a material world that has no existence in your spiritual consciousness. You see, you're now a step ahead of the error. You have no adversary. You have no enemy. You do not have to face a lie and do something about it. What should you do about a lie if you know the truth? Stay in the truth and watch the lie dissolve. Now then, you find that the lie presented to you is the tempter. It is trying to tempt you to believe that a lie must be reckoned with. It is trying to entice you into the field of battle. It says, "Heal me." And if you draw out the sword and want to heal it, he who lives by that sword will die by it. You will fail. You cannot heal a lie, because a lie has no existence. And as you know the truth, living in your spiritual center, that will become the spiritual center of the individual who brought the lie. And their own spiritual center, activated by your spiritual center, will dissolve that lie for them. The truth you know will set them free, because it will be the truth that they know. As the air is cleared this way, you find certain people will come to you with open, total faith. They will know the process. Their minds won't be clouded with, "Can this be done or can't it?" It will simply be, "This is my problem. I can't see it spiritually. Take care of it." And you'll find it's duck soup. Sometimes somebody will get you on the phone and talk for a half hour, taking away all of the spiritual energy that is present that could be healing. And then after the half hour, expect you to be able to freshly enter into spiritual consciousness after you've listened for one half hour to that which is the opposite. Now, your own brain will be doing that to you as well. Now, let's get on with this just a little further. The tempter, then, is the lie. It is either the individual bringing the lie to you, or your own brain, which is accepting the lie, either in their body or in your own. But always, in your spiritual consciousness, you must know that right where the so-called victim or lie appears, perfection is. That is your knowledge. Perfection is there. But you must also know it is where you are. For only as you realize it where you are and there do you have the one power function. Wherever you have separation, you break the circuit of power. Where you have one, you have the power. Infinity functions there and where you are and in between, and you have one power functioning. And you rest in that power, and it does the work. This is the reversal of the error in your consciousness. Now you find that you have no condition to heal and no matter to heal. You have nothing, only spirit, which never could change from being spirit to something else. You have not been trapped into the lie that spirit became imperfect matter. And so you're not hypnotized. You know that harmony must ever be present, and you stand there until that harmony appears. This is called knowing the truth, being still, and then you wait for the click, the peace, the glow, the realization which in you says, yes, that is the truth, and it must show forth. This is how we go about our Father's business. Now, oftentimes, you'll find that you can do this for just about anyone, anywhere. But there are problems that arise when someone says to you, heal my brother-in-law. The work must be done for the one who requests it. And those who are not aware of the nature of our work ask you to heal someone else. And although you'd love to, unless the impulse comes from the one who needs the healing, there's nothing you can do. You can try, and as you try, you find you don't succeed. Unless there is a genuine impulse from a person to you saying, heal me, and knows what they're asking for, you don't have the power in you to do it, and you'd just be wasting time. However, there are exceptions to that. Now, you will find it necessary, if you're working for people, to say, well, why don't you have him speak to me? Well, when he gets on to speak to you, you're just a hole in the wall to him. He's only doing it out of courtesy to someone who said, do it. The spiritual impulse wasn't there. And then even though the person says to you, help me, it's really not someone spiritually endowed to say, help me. The spiritual impulse wasn't there. They were prodded. And we run into difficulties that way. And there's nothing we can do about it. We're not ordained to heal that individual. We can't just pick up and say, I'm going to heal this one and that one. Someone has to dial our phone number in spirit. And then we can respond. Now, the exceptions are when someone is asking you to heal for a child, their child. Then it's just as if the child were calling, because the spiritual consciousness of the child and the parent are one and the same. So when mother calls and says, my little daughter has such and such, that's perfect. No problem. Or if mother calls and says, my 85-year-old grandmother is in a coma, help her, you can do that. But by and large, when a consciousness of an individual is their own, that consciousness must come to you, because it's the change in consciousness which appears as the healing. And if that consciousness hasn't come to you, you cannot function in such a way as to cause that consciousness to change. Wherever the person is makes no difference. They can be in Australia or they can be in your living room. You're dealing with the consciousness of that individual. And because the reality of that individual is spirit and we are unseparated, you're as close to that spirit in Australia as the one sitting where you are, because it's all one instantaneous spirit. Now, you see, the miracle worker is with us. Even if we had 100 failures and 2 successes, if they were real successes, it would be sufficient proof for us that the activity of spirit realized in consciousness is the Messiah. Fortunately, we don't have 100 failures and 2 successes. All of this work is really supported by the healing. It is that that keeps the practitioner able to perform, able to live, able to do the work. And this healing work is not meant for an individual. The healing consciousness that any one individual shows forth is only for one purpose: to show the possibilities of spiritual consciousness. Job points out very truthfully that everyone is potentially a practitioner, whether he likes it or not. Because wherever you are, there is a need for the knowledge of truth, and that is the work of a practitioner. Those around you are blessed by your knowledge of truth. And through this practitioner consciousness, you are opened up to the activity of God on earth in you. And the kingdom of God within becomes a living, realized reality. As time goes on, the work becomes of a more demanding nature. At first, you're dealing with the little things, the things that would heal whether you were called upon or not. But later, you're called in for the blindness, the deafness, the cancer, the paralysis, the things that are often considered incurable by the world. And there too you must not be subject to universal belief, because if anything is incurable, then God is not omnipotent. Or translated, if anything is incurable, then there is some other substance than pure spirit. And so let us continue building our spiritual consciousness, and we'll find that we're all pretty good metaphysical healers for others and for ourselves. This is the consciousness that is going to walk through the veil of death and not be touched. It's the consciousness for no one individual, but for all. It will be your consciousness. Next week is supply, and it would help for most of us to know about it, even if that isn't a problem with us. Because we'll meet many who do have that problem. And again, thank you. I'll see you then. Have a good day.